Hello, and welcome to Words on Film, the spoken word podcast dedicated to moving pictures. I'm Dan Burke, your host and movie critic, and I'm here to tell you exactly what I think of some of the latest movies out right now.
I'm glad you joined me to discuss my favorite topic, which is movies. And just as a reminder, the views and opinions expressed on Words on Film about movies or other topics are solely those of your host and movie critic, Dan Burke. They do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of any employees or volunteers who are working at the station airing this broadcast or the station as a whole. So with that said, I have three brand new movies to review for you for the show. Actually, one of them came out on May 1st, so that, as of the recording of this broadcast, is probably the one that's technically the most brand new, but the other two came out in April of 2020. I just didn't get a chance to review them until now. But I'm going to start off by reviewing the movie All Day and a Night, which is a 2020 American drama film written and directed by Joe Robert Cole. And Joe Robert Cole has directed one film before this. It was a film that came out in 2011, and I hadn't even heard of it, and it's unlikely that a lot of you have seen it. The movie was called Amber Lake, but Joe Robert Cole probably is best known for being one of the co-writers of the screenplay to Black Panther. And when you have a movie that's the number two highest grossing film in America, and the number one highest grossing film in the... The number one highest grossing film in America and the number two highest grossing film in the world, you can pretty much make whatever movie you want. So other than Joe Robert Cole's previous movie making efforts, I don't know too much about his life. So I can't say whether his directorial and motion picture writing footprint here is biographical, semi-autobiographical, or not. The movie is called All Day and a Night, and it takes place modern day in Oakland, California. Actually, the climax of the film takes place modern day, but the movie cuts between the year 2007 and the present, primarily focusing on the exploits of a young man by the name of Jacour Lincoln, who's played in adult form in this movie by a young actor named Ashton Sanders. And Ashton Sanders is an actor I'm not previously familiar with. Actually, I take that back. He did star in the movie Moonlight as one of the three actors who played Chiron. And he's also co-starred in The Equalizer 2 with Denzel Washington, as well as Captive State, a movie that came out last year that didn't do especially well. And All Day and a Night did remind me a little bit of Moonlight. It also reminded me of several films that are like it in this urban drama genre, like, for instance, The Hughes Brothers' Menace to Society. And I also want to compare it to Boys in the Hood, but I'm not going to do that. Either way, it is a powerful film. It is very sad in a lot of aspects, and it's about a young man who committed a homicide who deals with the repercussions of his actions. Specifically, he deals with being an inmate along with his father, who is an inmate with him in the same prison. And throughout the time he's in prison, he has the letters I'm just going to edit that out of the podcast. But either way, he's part of the California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation. CDCR. Those are the letters. So anyway, the movie cuts back and forth, I think actually a little too much, between the character Jacour when he's an adult facing the repercussions of his actions, and all the way back to when he's a kid. He kind of cuts into when he's a kid, when he's a teenager, and when he's adult. I think a little bit too much. And there's nothing wrong with nonlinear storytelling. Plenty of movies do it. But I really wish there could have been a little bit more consistency with the editing in this film, because it's really hard to tell when it cuts between 2007 whatever year he was a teenager, 2013, 2014, presumably, and when he's an adult in present day. I do think the movie was actually right to begin with this character, Jacquore, making this very literally fatal mistake that puts him behind bars. But I do think that the movie kind of took for granted the audience and their ability to determine what year a certain scene is taking place without the benefit of a lot of subtitles. But Ashton Sanders acts well in this film, and also Jeffrey Wright, who plays James Daniel Lincoln, his father, also known as JD, is also really good in this film. I can't exactly say, because this is Oakland, California, a city I've never been to, and if I had been Oakland, California, I probably wouldn't be in the part of this movie in which it takes place, you know, the ghetto, because look at me. I mean, for those of you who are listening to me on the radio, you obviously can't look at me, but you could probably determine, if you do look at a picture of me, that I probably wouldn't be caught in that section of Oakland. And if I did, I probably wouldn't survive very long. And the movie makes this part of Oakland, California look like a war zone. I can't exactly say if that's accurate, and I can't exactly say if this movie falls victims to a number of stereotypes, because I don't know. I mean, maybe Oakland is a better city than this. There probably are parts of this movie that ring true to real life, and there are certainly people who live these kinds of lives. I can't exactly say for sure, and I'm sure somebody who is more of a native of Oakland could probably determine the validity of the images that you see on the screen, as well as the characters within. I do think it's a very strong piece of filmmaking, and it certainly is gritty, and I certainly think that there are moments of it which you can extrapolate about somebody who is growing up in a poor, violent-ridden neighborhood who becomes a statistic and falls through the cracks. Almost this nature versus nurture debate. And I could certainly appreciate that of this movie, a film showing, although it's fictional, the all-too-real story of somebody who grows up in this kind of environment and becomes the rule rather than the exception in a very extreme case. I appreciated that about the movie, but again, a movie like this coming after Menace to Society and Moonlight and other films that paved the way for it, I can't exactly say whether or not it's particularly original compared to those films. My guess is, after seeing those kinds of films, it probably isn't. And I do think that there is an original aspect of it that probably should have been focused on more than the sum being greater than, or rather the whole being greater than the sum of its parts. And I would have liked to have seen this movie focus a lot more on the relationship between Jacquore and his father, JD, especially considering that it is a fraught relationship pretty much from the time that Jacquore was a kid. You have JD basically beating his son up when he finds out that he'd been beat up by a bully, telling him to be a man. And this is certainly a theme we've seen in other movies before, but I did think that this was the strongest element of the film, questioning what it means to be a man, to take a line from Bob Dylan, how many roads must a man walk down before they call him a man? And that's probably the only Bob Dylan reference that I'll put into this show, but you get the idea. And I also thought that the movie should have focused more on the irony of Jeffrey Wright's character being in prison at the same time as his own son. And this is a theme that's been visited in some movies, but it's probably been featured more prominently in the TV show Orange is the New Black, with a couple of great characters in that show. And I would have liked to have seen that part play out in this film. But again, I don't know if this adds anything particularly new to this urban, gritty crime drama. after movies like, as I said, Menace to Society, South Central, that's one I didn't mention before. But I do think it's a strong piece of filmmaking. But again, when you have an actor who has been in a much stronger urban drama like Moonlight, which, by the way, despite what people I know and some of my friends say, Moonlight won Best Picture, and it absolutely, positively deserved to win Best Picture. That was a great film. And it was also a lot more original than films that had come before it, which may not have paved the way the same way that Moonlight did. But All Day and a Night is still a good film. It's certainly not a film that you would watch casually on a Friday night like you would with some other Netflix shows, but I still liked it, and I give it my rating of a checkout. The reason it's not a knockout is because the editing and the non-linear storytelling could have been done a lot better without necessarily copying Moonlight. I did think that the movie starting out with that climax and this guy, the main character, Jacor, making what's essentially the biggest mistake of his life, I thought that was a good beginning, but again, cutting from when he was a kid to when he was a teenager to when he was adult, and then cutting back to those scenes randomly, not really knowing what year you're in, I think that could have been done a lot better. It may not have been done, it may not necessarily have benefited the movie to do it linearly, but again, there should have been more consistency with the editing. Plus, a very promising father-son dynamic here that I thought should have been played out. And especially when you have an actor like Ashton Sanders, who was not nominated for any Academy Awards, unfortunately, for his role in Moonlight. Although he was one out of three people to play the same character in Moonlight. So there was probably that. But also when you have a Tony Award-winning actor like Jeffrey Wright playing his father and having him only in the film for maybe about 5 or 10 minutes, it doesn't do the film a lot of good to underplay, particularly that actor, when you have him as an asset in this film as well. So All Day and a Night misses the mark from being great, but it is a good film, and it certainly is a film that I recommend. Welcome back to Words on Film, the spoken word show dedicated to moving pictures. I am your host and movie critic, Dan Burke. The next movie I'm going to be reviewing for you is Extraction, a movie that is, as of the date of this recording, not exactly brand new, but I suppose it's brand new compared to Citizen Kane. In other words, Extraction was released on Netflix on April 24th, 2020, and it tells the story of a black market mercenary by the name of Tyler Rake, who in this movie is played by Chris Hemsworth, and he embarks on the most deadly extraction of his career when he's enlisted to rescue the kidnapped son of an imprisoned international crime lord. And Sam Hargrave directed Extraction. Sam Hargrave is a director who has worked on such films previously, and it might not be too surprising when you find out that Joe and Anthony Russo, the directors of Avengers Endgame and Avengers Infinity War, produced this film, with Joe Russo writing the screenplay. But the director of this film, Sam Hargrave, primarily worked on stunts for movies including but not limited to both Avengers sequels that I just mentioned, Thor Ragnarok, Deadpool 2, the TV movie The Saint, Atomic Blonde, the 2017 movie starring Charlize Theron. And in terms of directing, this is actually his feature film directorial debut. He did direct a number of shorts before directing this film, but this movie shows that Sam Hargrave's strength is in action. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. But the thing about this movie that didn't exactly get me into it was I have seen this kind of action film not only with a a mercenary like Chris Hemsworth's character. But I've seen a movie where this guy who is adept at evading the authorities as well as evading terrorists who wants to kill a kid is trying to save a kid from impending doom. I have seen that kind of subplot so many times before, or actually, in this case, the main plot of a film. It didn't really strike me as I was watching this film as particularly original. And a movie that's 1 hour and 56 minutes, it's kind of one big chase. So, unlike other films on which Joe and Anthony Russo have worked, especially with Chris Hemsworth, and particularly with Thor Ragnarok, there was nothing particularly original about Extraction, and there was nothing particularly original about Chris Hemsworth's character either. I actually did think that the movie had a pretty good start with establishing Chris Hemsworth's character. You meet him for the first time when he is relaxing at his home in Australia, and he's just chumming it and hanging out with his Australian friends. There's actually one great scene where he jumps from a very high ledge into water, which luckily for him is appropriately deep, but then he just kind of wallows in the water, holding his breath, of course, and what he's waiting for, I'm not exactly sure, but you can tell from the great underwater shot that there is a lot on his mind. There is also one really impressive continuous shot where Chris Hemsworth is running from the authorities with this son of an imprisoned international crime lord. It is one continuous shot throughout 20 minutes. It pales in comparison to the two continuous shots within the entire 2017, or rather 2019 film, 1917. But for a scene with as much action and with Chris Hemsworth doing as much as he is in this film, it's an incredible shot. I just kind of wish that the characters in the film besides Chris Hemsworth's character was more interesting, or were more interesting, particularly the kidnapped son in this film. I do think that there are some great exterior shots of where Chris Hemsworth is running through this third world town, I believe in Iran, and trying to evade these people who are essentially trying to kill the son he is sworn to protect. But other than that, I did think the film got a little bit better in the third act when you begin to care more for Chris Hemsworth's character, and it feels less like show-off action and more like a real story besides a mercenary trying to save a son. And I really wanted, or save a child, I should say. But I really wanted more in this film in terms of story. And I think that other people who might appreciate action films, probably even greater than I would, might want to see that as well. But I thought for the movie itself, it was a very good action film, but other than that one continuous 20-minute shot of Chris Hemsworth trying to protect the son and also get people out of the way as much as he can, both with brute force and also with the aid of vehicles, and also the third act of this film, there wasn't really a lot about it that was particularly memorable. And I have seen Chris Hemsworth do better in terms of a film with more characterization and more interesting characters. But I did think that Extraction was at least memorable for those few action sequences. And for that reason, I give it a marginal recommendation. In other words, I give it my rating of a checkout. I think this, unlike All Day and a Night, is a film that is probably worth seeing in, you know, on Netflix. And maybe in theaters too, but most especially on Netflix when it's a Friday night and your friends are in the living room and you just want to watch something fun. But there wasn't a lot of substance other than that. And I would have expected better from Joe Russo, having written the screenplay upon which this action film is based. It is based on a graphic novel called Ciudad by Andre Parks, but my guess is that, even though I'm not familiar with the graphic novel, I would bet that the graphic novel upon which this movie is based has a lot more story and a lot more characterization besides one big chase in it. But it is a fun film. I just don't think it's a particularly memorable film. Welcome back to Words on Film, the spoken word show dedicated to moving pictures. I am your host and movie critic, Dan Burke. The next movie I'm going to be reviewing for you is Sergio, which is a film that is also a Netflix original, just like the other two films that I am reviewing for this show, All Day and a Night and Extraction. And Sergio was released to Netflix on April 17th, 2020. As of the date of this recording of the show, it's not technically brand new, but as I said with Extraction, it's more new than, I guess you could probably say, Citizen Kane, or if we're talking about more recent films, movies like Parasite. It's more brand new than Parasite, but this is, Sergio is a sweeping drama set in the chaotic aftermath of the U.S. invasion of Iraq. So this is back in 2003, when the war in Iraq first began, where the life of top UN diplomat Sergio Vieira de Mello hangs in the balance during the most treacherous mission of his career. The movie is directed by Greg Barker, and Greg Barker is a filmmaker who has had extensive experience as a producer. As of him being a director, he's directed several documentaries, but this is his feature film debut, and by feature film I mean a film with dramatic actors as opposed to just him directing documentaries. But he has had extensive experience directing documentaries that are based on world events. Probably his most famous documentary before this film is Manhunt, the inside story of the hunt for bin Laden, which came out a little while after Catherine Bigelow's Zero Dark Thirty, but it still told a very compelling story. He also directed another documentary, which I haven't seen, but I want to, and it's called The Final Year, which came out in 2017, and details the final year of Barack Obama's presidency. That horrible year, 2016, which I don't ever want to go back to. 2020, this year in which we are currently, is only 4 months old. It hasn't been off to the greatest, actually it's been off to a terrible start with this pandemic and over 60,000 American lives and a million other people being infected by this COVID-19. It's a terrible year. I don't want to negate how bad a year this is, but 2016 was also a very bad year for several reasons. But because of that, The Last Year, directed by Greg Barker, is a documentary I will hopefully seek out. Will I review it for you for this show? Maybe. But in any extent, Greg Barker may not have much experience directing dramatic films with actors, but he certainly is very well-versed in world events, and you can certainly extrapolate from the movie Sergio a critical eye on the war in Iraq. And also, let me just interject before I go on, another reminder that the views and opinions expressed on Words on Film about movies or other topics are solely those of your host and movie critic, Dan Burke, me. They do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of any employees or volunteers who are working at the radio station airing this broadcast or the station as a whole. So, with that said, let me get into the war in Iraq. This was a huge, huge black mark on the legacy of George W. Bush, from which I don't think George W. Bush will ever fully recover. And granted, the lives that have been lost in America alone from COVID-19 have far surpassed the lives lost in the Iraq War. But I think it's important to remember how much of a mistake the war in Iraq was. And I don't think anybody can really dispute that 17 years after the war began and 9 years after Barack Obama, who was the president at the time, finally put an end to the war. But this movie, Sergio, casts a critical light that's not entirely explicit. You again have to extrapolate that critique of the Iraq War, particularly on the life of UN diplomat Sergio Vieira de Mello, who was not particularly involved in U.S. relations when it came to the war in Iraq and the mess that caused. But his life was certainly impacted, and the lives of those around him, because of that. Now, I could tell you the ending of this film, about what happens to Sergio Vieira de Mello. I'm not going to do that, but the movie does do a great job with portraying the life of Mr. de Mello. I could go through his whole name, but I'm not going to do that. Sergio, you know the rest, is played in this movie by an actor by the name of Wagner Moura. And I hope I pronounced his name right. He is a Brazilian actor, and the Sergio in real life is from Brazil, so kudos to this film for getting that right. And it details his relationship with his second wife, Carolina Larriera, who is not a composite character. She's a real person, and she played in this film very well by an excellent actress by the name of Ana de Armas, who is much better known than Wagner Moura. And Ana de Armas, you probably know from such films as Blade Runner 2049, where she played the love interest of Ryan Gosling's character. You probably know her from Knives Out, where she played Marta, the caregiver of Christopher Plummer, who is embroiled in a conspiracy to have killed Christopher Plummer's character. And that, by the way, is not a spoiler. That's the entire point of the movie. And you also might have seen her in some earlier films like Hands of Stone, which was a biographical film about the Panamanian boxer. What was his name? Roberto Duran. I forgot the name briefly. And she also played the love interest of Miles Teller in the movie War Dogs, which was a decent film, but not as good as the movie led you to believe that it was. But either way, Ana de Armas is excellent in this film. She has great scenes with Wagner Moura, and the two of them have amazing chemistry together. Plus, when something ultimately tragic happens to Mr. de Mello in this film, the tension that you feel from seeing Mr. de Mello, played by Wagner Moura, I'm just going to briefly spoil it. He's buried in rubble. I'm not going to tell you how he got there. I'm not going to tell you if he survives, but if you want to know if he survives, either look him up or see the movie, but I recommend you see the movie. But the tension between the two of them and his fight for survival really sells this film. I do think that the editing of this film could have used some work, but it was probably better edited than All Day and a Night. But I do think it makes the mistake that All Day and a Night makes, in the sense that it does seem to randomly cut back to certain points of Mr. de Mello's life, but you don't get a sense of context other than the very first subtitle that sets the scene up for you. But again, once the initial subtitle is given to you and a later scene around the same time period comes, you never see that subtitle again. So you do have to use your brain to catch up little by little. But Sergio is very well acted. I think that it certainly has a message behind it about foreign relations and how even the United Nations, which usually takes a neutral stance towards whether a war is justified or not, I think it certainly casts a critical eye, an appropriate critical eye, on the start of the war in Iraq, and even how a seasoned diplomat like Sergio Vieira de Mello was in over his head, despite not particularly being an ally of the United States war effort. Also, the written epilogue at the end certainly solidifies that critical eye, but I think it does so appropriately. Sergio is not propaganda. I think there's enough ambiguity in it, and nothing that's particularly ham-fisted, so that the political message can be extrapolated from the audience member, regardless of their political beliefs, and regardless of whether they thought the war in Iraq was justified or not. I happen to be one of those people who thinks that the war in Iraq was a huge, not to mention costly, mistake in a lot of fronts. And this movie actually does show real archive footage of real-life figures, including the real Sergio Vieira de Mello in his office conducting diplomatic exercises, but it also has good archive footage of Kofi Annan addressing the United Nations on De Mayo's condition, as well as George W. Bush doing that ill-advised mission accomplished speech that pretty much marred his presidential legacy. It did not prevent him from winning re-election, as we all know, but it is certainly one of the main reasons that George W. Bush is, to this day, considered one of our worst presidents. And that's really all I'm going to say about it, but I forgot to tell you what I would give Sergio as a rating. The editing, I think, probably prevents this film from being great, but I still give it a marginal knockout, because what the editing lacks, I think that the performances by Wagner, Moura, and Ana de Armas certainly makes up for as the film progresses. And I also think that Greg Barker does a great job incorporating his skills as a documentary filmmaker into this film. This is a biographical drama, but you could also call it a docudrama, because as far as I could tell, the movie was accurate. And I do think that Greg Barker certainly has the abilities as a dramatic film director to make a much, much better film after this. But Sergio, while it's not a perfect film, it still is a knockout. I still consider it very close to being great, and it is certainly a great start in Greg Barker's dramatic directorial career, which hopefully he will continue after this film. Welcome back to Words on Film, the spoken word show dedicated to moving pictures. I am your host and movie critic, Dan Burke, and now that I have reviewed all the new movies that I have to review for you for this show, and also because there are no movies that are being released to theaters right now, as we are in the middle of a pandemic, and it's unlikely that I will be going to the movie theaters in the next couple of weeks, even though I have heard some recent news about certain cities, including Nashville, Tennessee, where I broadcast from now, opening up, I'm still in no hurry to get out there. some people are gradually getting us out of social distancing, but I will social distance with anybody who is not my girlfriend pretty much until I am told the coronavirus has completely gone away. And it will probably be a while before I do that. So I would like to encourage all of you, just as a side note, if your city, you know, opens up according to your mayor or your governor, please be safe and please practice good and healthy social distancing practices. But with that said, again, my segment, What's Topping in the Box Office, or rather, What's Coming Up Next, can't be done for at least the next couple of weeks because the movie theaters are closed, as, dare I say it, they should be right now. There's a lot you can say about the coronavirus, COVID-19, and how the government's been handling it. That would get me into an entirely different topic I don't want to get into right now. I'm just going to focus on movies. But my point being that while movie theaters are closed, as they should be, I'll focus more on the new releases that are being released via streaming and also DVD and Blu-ray releases. And speaking of DVD and Blu-ray releases, that's the topic that I'm going to cover right now. The newest film, and I put newest in quotes because it's not a new film, it's just a new DVD and Blu-ray release that came out on Tuesday, April 29th, 2020, is the Criterion Collection release of the 2014 film The Grand Budapest Hotel. And this is Wes Anderson's tour de force film. I think this is probably the film that Wes Anderson spent the most on when it came to set design, but it is totally worth it because the Grand Budapest Hotel in present day and also in the 1940s or 1950s, whenever this film took place, is so intricately designed, both in its heyday and also after it had seen better years in the present part of this film. The hotel itself is practically its own character, and it definitely is the selling point of this movie. In fact, The Grand Budapest Hotel is such a great film that it came out in March of 2014, but it was still nominated for several Oscars come the following Oscar season. And the way the Academy Awards is designed, a lot of the films, in fact, a vast majority of the films that get nominated are not films that came out early in the year. They're usually films that came out later in the year, like November and December. Of course, there are exceptions, and the film that wins Best Picture is not necessarily one that opens up later in the year. But sometimes some really great movies that come out in February, March, April that are still Oscar eligible do tend to get swept under the rug. Not always, but, you know, opening up early in the year is usually not a particularly big asset for a film. But The Grand Budapest Hotel opened up in March of 2014, but it was still nominated for 9 Academy Awards, winning 4. And it probably comes as no surprise to anyone, particularly when you see this film, that it won for Best Achievement in Production Design, which it absolutely deserved. And the people that won that award were Adam Stockhausen, who won for Production Design, and Anna Pinnock, who won for Set Decoration. And they deserved that because the set decoration of this film is amazing. I mean, the set decorator, Anna Pinnock, probably looked at pictures of European hotels from just after World War II and use that as a set design, and it totally pays off. But even though the vast majority of the film takes place post-World War II, there is a section of the film that takes place either present day or in the 80s or 90s where the hotel is run down, and it's only about 5 or 10 minutes of the film, but that is really impressive too. But getting back to the topic of Academy Awards, which it won, The Grand Budapest Hotel, in addition to winning for Best Achievement in Production Design, also won for Best Achievement in Costume Design, which was also very well deserved. The person who won that is named Milena Canonero, and that person, I can't tell whether it's a man or a woman, deserved that award for Best Achievement in Costume Design. Best Achievement in Makeup and Hairstyling, which was won by Francis Hannon and Mark Coulier. And before I get into why that should have won, I'll just name the other award that Grand Budapest Hotel won. It was Best Achievement in Music Written for Motion Pictures, also known as Original Score, which was won by Alexander Desplat. So, Best Achievement in Makeup and Hairstyling. The reason this film alone should have won was because of the great makeup job that was done to make Tilda Swinton alone into an old woman. Tilda Swinton is a great actress, yes. She's also a very strange actress. I think anyone who has seen at least one of her films, especially a film as odd as The Grand Budapest Hotel, as well as some of the other films she did with Wes Anderson or with the Coen brothers, probably know that. But to Tilda Swinton's credit, even though she is an odd actress, she is a committed actress. And whether or not the role she plays is meant to be weird or not, she takes whatever role she has and runs with it. And also, she is committed to being in that makeup and hairstyling. And even though she's only in the film for a couple of minutes, in fact, almost all of the actors, save the lead actor, who is Tony Revolori, and maybe even Ralph Fiennes, is in the film most of the time. The other actors, like Tilda Swinton, F. Murray Abraham, Harvey Keitel, Bill Murray, and the list goes on and on of well-known actors in the film, even though they're in there only for a couple of minutes, they're dedicated to the film. I mean, they are dedicated to their characters, and they embody the characters so well. So The Grand Budapest Hotel is a movie that is certainly a great film. Even 6 years after I've seen it, I'm still raving about it. But my point being that it is certainly an appropriate addition to the Criterion Collection, because the Criterion Collection, I think there are films, great films out there that I think should be added to the Criterion Collection that haven't been added yet. But at the same time, I think that just about every film that has been added to the Criterion Collection deserves to be there. Now, the Criterion Collection does not necessarily go for films that are great. They go for films that have some sort of unique impact on filmmaking. And I think certainly The Grand Budapest Hotel, arguably more than other Wes Anderson films, deserves to be in that category of films that had some sort of revolutionary filmmaking mark on them. And acting aside, certainly making The Grand Budapest Hotel into seemingly a real hotel is one of the remarkable achievements that this movie has. And admittedly, the Criterion Collection does have some favoritism towards Wes Anderson that I don't necessarily think is unwarranted or uncalled for. What I mean by that is, this is not the first Wes Anderson film that has been added to the Criterion Collection. They added Bottle Rocket, Rushmore, the Steve Zissou movie, The Life Aquatic. Again, I just briefly forgot about that film. And also the Darjeeling Limited are amongst some other films, probably not the only films of Wes Anderson that have been added to the Criterion Collection. But Wes Anderson certainly has a way of putting his own unique stamp on films in a way that can be easily parodied, yes. Like, for instance, there's one particular sketch on Saturday Night Live starring Edward Norton playing Owen Wilson in a horror film directed by Wes Anderson. If you get a chance to see that SNL sketch on YouTube, I highly recommend it. It's probably easy to find on YouTube. But the point is that The Grand Budapest Hotel deserves its place in the Criterion Collection. And I probably will get the film on Blu-ray, not on DVD. Although DVD is acceptable, but I think to really get the essence of this film, it's worth it seeing it on Blu-ray for the set design alone. But anyway, the other films that are being released on DVD and Blu-ray this past week, being April 29th, 2020, include some other films that I haven't seen, so I can't exactly recommend them to you or not recommend them to you, but I'll just tell you what they are. There's one film starring Blake Lively and Jude Law, and it's being touted as a movie from the producers of James Bond. And this is actually what they say, from the producers of James Bond. Now, there is no movie named James Bond. There are James Bond movies, but yeah, there have been maybe at least 20 producers in the 50 plus years that they've been making James Bond movies. Actually, nearly 60 years. So I don't know if these people produced the Daniel Craig movies, the Pierce Brosnan movies, even the Timothy Dalton James Bond movies of the late 80s. I don't know, but it gives you a lot to assume here. But the movie is called The Rhythm Section. And Blake Lively in The Rhythm Section stars as Stephanie Patrick, an ordinary woman on a path of self-destruction after her family is tragically killed in a plane crash. When Stephanie discovers that the crash was not an accident, she enters a dark, complex world to seek revenge on those responsible and find her own redemption. As I said before, the movie also co-stars Jude Law. So, as I said, I have not seen this film, so I can't recommend it. I can say, however, that Blake Lively's repertoire is hit or miss. Sometimes when she's in a movie, she's very good, like movies like The Town and the one she did with Anna Kendrick, A Simple Favor. And I think actually A Simple Favor is probably Blake Lively's best film acting to date. But other times in movies like The Age of Adeline or the Green Lantern, she's pretty, obviously, but she also plays either a very bland character or the ones we've seen before. So Blake Lively has really impressed me in A Simple Favor and The Town, but those are amongst the only two movies where I saw her and I thought to myself, wow, that is a great acting job. But The Rhythm Section, I doubt, is one of those movies, but if I get a chance to see it, either on DVD or Blu-ray, I'll let you know what I think on one of my next shows. Another film that's coming out on DVD and Blu-ray, not 4K though, is a movie that's called Guns Akimbo. What does akimbo mean? I don't know, but I would presume that akimbo is a Japanese word. But despite that, Daniel Radcliffe and Samara Weaving, who are British and Australian respectively, star in the movie. And Guns Akimbo tells the story of Miles, who is Daniel Radcliffe's character, who is a video game developer who leads, according to the description of this film, a nerdy existence. But that existence takes a dramatic turn when he inadvertently gets caught up as the next contestant with something called Skizm, all caps S-K-I-Z-M, an underground game live streaming real-life death matches. Obviously, Skizm is fictional, but anyway, when Daniel Radcliffe's character excels at running away from everything, they won't help him outlast a real killer at the top of her game. I presume that's Samara Weaving's character, but yeah, Guns Akimbo sounds like a cool film. I can't exactly say if it's great. I am very surprised that, as far as I know, this film didn't get released in the theaters. If I can get a copy on DVD or Blu-ray, I'll definitely give it a look. It certainly sounds like the David Cronenberg film Existenz, which came out in 1999, and it's a film that also didn't make a particularly big splash at the box office. In fact, it might have bombed, but it was a very interesting film, considering it was directed by David Cronenberg, who directs some of the most messed up films I've seen. It certainly has its share of weirdness, but it also has a certain je ne sais quoi to it that I think parodies this virtual reality, video game obsessed culture in which we live. So Guns Akimbo sounds like an awesome film. It certainly sounds like one of those, not only a movie like Existenz, where a guy gets way caught up in a video game that seems too real, that blurs the lines between reality and the virtual world, but it also sounds a lot like those other films like The Running Man, for instance, where it's the post-apocalyptic dystopian future where people are entertained by people on game show-like shows, but unlike game shows that we're used to these days, this is a matter of life and death, and people are entertained by that. I guess people don't think to themselves, this person could die, this is a human being, but then again, I guess it's just one of those things you just have to turn your brain off and watch for the fun of it. So, if you want to call it that. But anyway, those are among the films that are being released on DVD and Blu-ray this week. You can probably stream them on Amazon Prime or some other streaming platform. Again, when I say that, I am not advertising Amazon Prime, Netflix, or any other platforms. I'm just saying that these films may or may not be on them, and just feel free to take a look for yourself if you want to. I just want to remind all of you that you are listening to the show Words on Film, which is the spoken word show dedicated to moving pictures. I am your host and movie critic, Dan Burke, practicing social distancing. And by that, I mean I mainly stay in my apartment working my full-time job, but I only practice social distancing with people I don't know and I'm absolutely sure are not infected. Right now, that includes my girlfriend. But most of the time I stay in my apartment, except for when I do this show, because I bring some disinfectant wipes with me, and I am the only person in the studio. But man, I don't know what I would do if I was not hosting this podcast. I would go nuts. I mean, I had to go on a hiatus to try to find a radio station that would pick up this show. Fortunately, I found one. And I am all the happier for it. I'm even happier that the pandemic has not stopped me from hosting this show. So I enjoy hosting this show. I hope you enjoy listening to it. So before I end the show to which you were listening, Words on Film, the spoken word show dedicated to moving pictures, I might as well tell you some of the movies that are being released on streaming, specifically on Netflix. And when I say Netflix, I am not endorsing Netflix or promoting it or being paid to tell you about Netflix. It's the only streaming service to which I subscribe, so I see these movies when they're available. But there are some interesting films that are being released on Netflix this month that are not necessarily movies that are Netflix originals, but they are films that, as far as I'm concerned, are worth checking out. And one of them is the movie Uncut Gems, which is one of the last films I saw in the movies before the pandemic. It wasn't the very last, but it was one of the last. And man, I am so glad I saw this because this is an excellent film. It made the list of movies that were snubbed for Oscar nominations. For instance, I think there were a handful of films like Uncut Gems as well as Us and a few others that I can't think of right now that were criminally nominated for absolutely nothing. And I think that if there was one award for which Uncut Gems should have at least been nominated, it was Adam Sandler for Best Actor. I think Adam Sandler excels in dramas, but unfortunately, he doesn't seem to get either the critical or commercial credit that he deserves. And I think that It's this weird kind of paradox because I've heard more than a few people get really tired of a lot of the comedies, including the Netflix originals that Adam Sandler stars in. Although I will say he was in a film with Jennifer Aniston called Murder Mystery, which came out last year, that I thought was actually a high quality comedy film. It's where he just stopped doing the whole homophobic and misogynistic humor and just focused on doing a film that was a parody of murder mysteries, kind of like Murder by Death, but it was actually funny. He actually played a relatable guy who finds himself embroiled in a murder mystery that he thinks is fake, but is actually real. I thought Murder Mystery was a really encouraging restart for Adam Sandler. And I think that Uncut Gems shows that Adam Sandler can still sell drama. So this Uncut Gems movie, and I only have a few minutes to talk about this, is brought to you from the Safdie brothers, the directing duo of Benny and Josh Safdie, who tells the story of a jewelry dealer who gets in over his head when it comes to his personal life. This movie has a lot of favorable comparisons to Bad Lieutenant, where you see a guy who you could tell is a professional, certainly knows what he's talking about, and has it together in his professional life, but his personal life is completely falling apart, both because of his gambling addiction and also because of his infidelities. He is married to Idina Menzel. In other words, he's married to a beautiful woman, but he's also having an extramarital affair with a much younger woman. But it's really his gambling debts that are getting him over his head in a curse from which he may not recover. And there are a ton of unlikable people in this movie. Adam Sandler's character is one of them. And that's probably one of the reasons that people are not liking this film, or some people are not liking this film. Some people call it a guy's film, which might be a little bit accurate. But either way, this is a film that I unfortunately don't have time to delve into as much. I will say it is one of the better films of 2019. I enjoyed it immensely. I thought Adam Sandler acted really well in it. It's probably one of the first films where Adam Sandler has played somebody who, despite not having a ton of makeup on, other than the customary, you know, one layer of makeup that most actors have when they don't play aliens or old men, I couldn't really recognize Adam Sandler in this movie. And I mean that in the best way possible. I think he plays a character he gets into so well that he fortunately is not the same guy you saw in Happy Gilmore, The Waterboy, and just name an Adam Sandler movie, even Punch Drunk Love. I mean, I thought Adam Sandler acted so well in Punch Drunk Love. It's probably the best movie he's done ever. But again, I could still tell it was Adam Sandler. It was just Adam Sandler acting really well. But Uncut Gems is probably, I wouldn't say it's better than Punch Drunk Love, but it certainly is up there as one of his best dramatic films. And just about every film in which Adam Sandler's acted in a dramatic role, except maybe Rain Over Me, where I thought he overdid it. Other than that film, he's been great in dramatic movies.
Well, that's all the time I have for this episode of Words on Film. I always love talking about movies, and I hope you liked what you heard. If you did, please subscribe and rate the show and leave comments if you can. I would love to get your feedback, even if it's more criticism than praise. This has been Words on Film. I'm Dan Burke, and until my next episode, I'll see you at the movies.